Welcome back to Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast. This week, we have chapters 21 and 22 of our early release Wind and Truth episodes. David, how are you?
I'm all right. My life is taking care of my daughter at the moment. So,
is that going well?
It's going okay. She's in a fussy stage right now, and it's been tough to get her to sleep. So,
I understand. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing well. Just went to a wedding the other day, so excited and ready to talk about these chapters.
Sounds good. We have two rather lengthy chapters this week for Wind and Truth, chapters 21 and 22. Let's roll intro, and then we'll read an excerpt from The Wave Kings. All right, we are continuing in the Way of Kings fourth parable. I'll go ahead and read it. It says, "First, I dared not tell them this dusty traveler with whom they shared a meal was in fact that very king they had heard of. The second was that I did not explain that very king had abdicated his throne and walked away from his kingdom. After we parted with affection the next day, I watched their cart roll into the distance, pulled by the father and with two children riding in the rear, the mother striding with a pack on her back. Dust blew with them, for dust goes where it wishes, ignoring all borders." So if we remember from our previous week, Noadon said, I assume this is Noadon, Noadon said that he was about to tell two lies, or with the two lies I gave them or whatever. And I think, David, you said that maybe he was lying by omission or something like that. Turns out this is what we have here with the first epigraph. It's that he's deliberately not telling them that he's Noadon and that he walked away from his throne. And that's what like inspired them by, or he's like inspired them by being a king or whatever. Do you guys have anything for this?
There's a few interesting things that come to mind for me. One is, I think we're getting more and more examples in this book of lying through omission. I think that I would almost call it a theme at this point. There's some more examples in this chapter, and then, or in the two chapters we read, and then in general, just this whole book, there's been so much lying through omission that we've been discovering. Just dating back to even the prologue of, hey, the Storm Father was communicating with Gavilar, right? You'd think he'd bring that up at some point, right? So the Stormfather lying through omission. We have examples of Yasna lying through omission in this chapter. And it's just a small thing that doesn't matter. I'm referencing, just to not bury the lead, I'm referencing her noticing that Lift and someone else is under the table and doesn't even say anything. Continues with the secret meeting with two people hiding under the table.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they're discovered later.
I mean, we'll talk about this more later, but I assume Yasna knows who it is and just doesn't tell the reader. She sees Lift and then she says, oh, and there's somebody else.
Moving on. She doesn't tell the reader, but she also doesn't tell anyone else in the room.
Right. So, and I figured if she didn't know who it was, she would have stopped the meeting and figured out who it was. So I assume she knows who it is and doesn't care. But anyway, we can talk about that more later.
Anyway, yeah, let's talk about that when we get to it. The other thing that interests me is the last line, dust blew with them, for dust goes where it wishes, ignoring all borders. We're getting a lot of, like, it wasn't the term primal that was used in these chapters, like primal forces. Kind of
in context to what?
Given the, it was brought up by, the sibling brought it up.
Okay.
Saying that the bondsmiths used to bond the primal forces before they bonded the Spren. And so is dust a primal force, or are we talking about the wind again?
Right.
And that's kind of, and it ignoring borders, that feels That feels like something that might be hinting. I don't know what it's hinting at, but like that's phrased really interestingly for me, given other context.
Right. Yeah, I also did notice that borders of countries and, you know, wind and stuff like that seems to be relevant with what we're doing currently.
Mm-hmm. I didn't read anything supernatural into that part. Just thought he was, one, doing it for the drama, and two, a bit of a commentary on, you know, what becomes the 10 Silver Kingdoms, where they're all working together. There's a purpose, a large sense of unity, perhaps a bit of foreshadowing there on Brandon's part. Foreshadowing for something to happen, you know, way back in the past.
On that note, I don't think it's intentional on Noadon's part, but I think that on Sanderson's part, including this here, is intentional. And we're meant to read more into it than Noadon intended.
Right.
But also you can kind of say that these primal forces kind of exist because of the way perception interacts with the universe, with the Cosmere. And so the way he thinks about the dust, if that's a common sentiment, then that could cause the dust to become an entity, even if it's not intentional.
Yeah, that's true, I suppose. If you, like he could create a dust spren or whatever. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I keyed into the section where he's talking about how he abdicated his throne, walking away from his kingdom. And that's another moment where it's very dramatic, but I think we would have known. It seems like it would have been an important point for Dalinar to bring up earlier if Noadon literally abdicated his kingdom and walked away and was never going back. Why did this never come up before? Is it perhaps more metaphorical?
To me, it's like you can't go on a journey like Noadon did and rule your kingdom at the same time. So to me, it felt like he had to at least step down for a bit when he did his journey. But wasn't the entire point of his journey to learn to be a better king?
Right. Yeah. I also did notice this. Abdicate seems permanent. But from what we understand, it's not that he's just going on this journey of self-discovery of what or whatever, and then resumes his kingship at the end. Or at least that's what I assumed up until this point, but I don't know.
Maybe he moved kingdoms.
Maybe.
Like did like he said he went from Abba something something to Urithiru. And if Urithiru was his if Urithiru was his final destination, maybe he started king of wherever he was, abdicated that, then eventually ended up at Urithiru and became king of Urithiru, or something along those lines.
It could be. I think it's more likely that he wasn't sure if he even wanted to continue to be a king before, and it's reflected in this part of the story. And moving forward, by the end of the story, he realizes, okay, I do want to still be a king, and I can still be a good king. Those can exist.
Yeah. That seems likely. Anything else for the epigraphs? Okay. We have a 59-minute chapter as far as audiobook length goes. Starts with Shallan and then moves into back towards our meeting of monarchs that we've been discussing for at least a couple weeks now. This meeting's been going on. But it starts with this ghost blood insertion on Narok. So Shallan plus crew show up on Narok, pretend to be Krem sweepers, and they're spying on the ghost bloods. Did we get any big reveals in here? I don't even remember. Or are we just setting up for what's about to happen?
The big reveal to me was realizing just how extensive the ghost bloods are and how infiltrated into every single government they are.
Okay,
I knew they were there. I knew they were involved with things, but They saw someone from the Prime. They saw, you know, multiple people from the war camps, Alethi, all these different people coming together. And, you know, I wonder how many of them are locals, how many are world hoppers that were brought in for this purpose. And like, what is their strategy for building their organization? How do they get people to want to join their Roshar, not Roshar, their Scadrial Defense Force when they're from Roshar?
Yeah, I guess now that you said that, I also did think about that Shallan is super intimidated by the scale of the Ghostbloods. And taking away from like Words of Radiance, I've always thought that Ghostbloods was like, you know, a group of like 20 that are hanging out on Roshar and doing their thing. It doesn't appear to be that. I think Sanderson's trying to ramp up the Ghostbloods as a significant threat, not only to Shallan, but to our coalition, to Roshar in general. So,
well, the thing that stuck out to me is how much time, like you said, this chapter is very long. How many words Sanderson devoted to this little scene here that to me didn't feel like we needed all that detail. So
right.
It's kind of curious. Like, I almost feel like it's really reinforcing that Shallan and her minions all kind of think very highly of their ability to spy. And I think that we've learned quite well how much better the Ghostbloods are and more experienced they are and how fumbling Shallan has been. And I wonder that if the Ghostbloods just know exactly what they're doing. And so by spending so much time showing kind of the way they're kind of playing spy almost, like it's almost like what you'd read in a novel. I mean, I know it is a novel, but like, doesn't it feel like, you know, Shallan read some spy novels and was, oh, that's how you spy? Like, it really, I don't know. To me, it felt really off. Like talking about, oh, we're going to imitate soldiers, then we're going to imitate Krim sweepers, and this person actually knows how to use the tool, right? You know, they think of Krim sweepers as lowly, but they do that as their job, and they'd be very good and efficient at it. And that was a thought in my mind. It's like, how can you pretend to be a Krim sweeper if you've never done that before?
Right.
Right. These kind of things stuck out to me. And they're just hanging out near a doorway as people enter. Like, I don't know. To me, it feels like she's going to walk in and they'll be like, hi, Shallan.
Yeah.
Like, I'm wondering if this is very one-sided. Shallan is assuming that the Ghostbloods want to kill her now. But we know a couple things. One, we know the Ghostbloods got what they wanted. And two, we only got the one-sided part of the conversation of Shallan going, I'm now at war with you, or whatever. Like, she declared war over the Sion. Like, I wonder if the Ghostbloods are like,
yeah.
I don't know.
The Ghostbloods seem to be a lot more powerful than what Shallan's giving them credit for. I agree. They're kind of just hanging out and taking notes on who's walking through the door here. Like, that seems pretty 101 of don't do that. At least use a light weaving and make a fake wall like we used to do back in Words of Radiance. I don't know.
Yeah, and we know the Ghostbloods can detect magic now with the sand. And
yeah.
I don't know. It's...
Anything else on the Shallan piece?
You have a look, Tim. I don't know if that's a look of wanting to say something here.
Yeah, that's a look of I unmuted to say something and immediately forgot what I was going to say. Let me see if I can get around to it, because I hadn't considered Shallan and them just being amateurs and the Ghostbloods knowing what's going on. And I thought that might be kind of cheap, but as I'm considering it, that's a large theme with Shallan. She thinks she knows what's going on and she's capable, but really she is new and is learning new things. And at multiple times you see that she could do more than she ever thought she could, but also she doesn't have experience in these things that she's pretending that she does, and that matters. So I'm very curious how that'll show up.
Yeah, that's very chapter 3 of Oathbringer, right? touch mm-hmm. on part three of Oathbringer, where Vale isn't actually from the streets and doesn't actually know what's going on and makes horrible mistakes with that poor boy and things like that. So
yeah,
I don't know that she's grown out of that. I mean, did she learn her lesson from that? Doesn't seem like it.
She's still the girl that makes bad puns.
True.
Yeah.
I feel that.
So I don't know. Like, I don't know what Sanderson's goal is here. Is his goal what I said, or is he attempting and failing, at least from my perspective, to show growth in Shallan and how she's actually competent at spawn? And we'll have to see what happens, because I'm curious, like, what is Shallan's plan here? Because she says she can't rely on light weaving for the next step, but it looks like she's planning on just walking through that door and not getting caught. So what's her plan? I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, at the end of all of this, are we going to see Marais or Ayatel in jail for 30 years? Maybe that's why we haven't heard from them.
Oh, in like the Lost Metal, is that what you
mean?
Yeah,
in the Lost Metal.
Okay, I see. Interesting. But yeah, that whole timeline is really weird, because even if we catch Marais and Yatil, we were just told that the Ghostbloods are like everywhere on Roshar. You'd think some word would have got out other than like a calamity happening mm-hmm. and nobody can get out. So I don't know if locking up Yatil and Marais would still lead to not hearing from them at all. I don't know.
Yeah, and perhaps they had heard, but it's not their story, and so we just didn't get that information in the Lost Metal.
Yeah, they are specifically mentioned, and that they assume they're still on Roshar, so I guess they, I don't know.
It sounds like someone like Felt is in direct communication with Kelsier, but it also sounds like Yatil and her group are kind of a splinter faction.
Yeah.
And don't really take orders from Kelsier except in spirit. It sounds like Kelsier doesn't really have control over Yatil's faction. And I think that's probably intentional on Sanderson's part to distance Kelsier from their actions.
Sure. I wonder if Yatil and Marais have shown up since the prologue on Roshar.
They're suspiciously missing.
Or if they were there before that. I wonder if the prologue goes poorly for Kelsier, as we've seen, and then he sends Marais and Yatil and their crew to Roshar as a consequence of the prologue.
Yeah, when do they show up in Roshar is a very good question. They needed a lot of time to be able to infiltrate all these different governments.
Right. Felt was there before the prologue. He was there in that Dalinar flashback.
Well, that's after the prologue, but still, it's near.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, it's like a year after the prologue. You're right.
I think the only event we've seen that's pre-prologue are some of the flashbacks of like Kaladin and Shallan, and then also the 4,500 years ago prelude.
Well, and all the early Dalinar stuff.
Yeah, the early Dalinar stuff, true. So the flashbacks can be before the prologue, I guess. It's just this particular one wasn't.
Right.
Okay. I don't know where I was going with that then.
Anything else for the Ghostbloods? Okay. So we're back to our meeting of monarchs. And we have a Sigzil point of view, right? Sigzil point of view. We have a Yostin point of view. I felt for a lot of this until we get to like the honor Stormfather stuff towards the end, I felt like this was a lot of canonizing stuff that we already knew. That there was a lot of catching the characters up with what the reader knows, or the very invested Cosmere reader, as opposed to the casual Cosmere reader. Because a lot of this info that we're getting, I realize we're getting for the first time in book. But we've been told these things in Words of Brandon and stuff like that, or like at conventions and on live streams and stuff like that. But a lot of these info drops about shards and the sibling and Stormfather and stuff like that, I felt like I've already known this, but I was trying to think, how did I know this? Was this told to me in Stormlight, or was this told to me at Dragon Steel 2022 or 23 or whatever? Did you guys get that feeling that the characters are being brought up to speed with the reader?
I think you might be on to, like, you might be at least partially correct that, you know, imagine someone who only has read Stormlight.
Right.
And this is kind of like the reveal part of our arc, where like he sets things up and hints at things some more, and then finally just outright tells us. And if, you know, because we've had years to theorycraft and a bunch of other books and WBs and everything, like we already knew that. But like you said, we only thought we knew it because it wasn't canonized yet. It was just heavily hinted at, and non-canon sources were revealing it. So yeah, I think that's an interesting point, and I think I agree with you.
Because I have several friends who have just read Stormlight. They've just read The Way of Kings, through Rhythm of War, haven't even picked up any of the novellas. And so as we were getting some Jasnah information, some Sigsil information in these chapters, I was like, okay, I already knew that, but how did I know that? I guess this is the first time I've been officially told as a reader. So
do you have any like specific examples?
Yeah, the Sigsil Spren like name reveal. I was like, okay, I knew this wasn't auxiliary, but how did I know it wasn't auxiliary? Because I've read Sunlit. But what if I hadn't read Sunlit, then I wouldn't know that we needed a name for his Windrunner Spren, right? Like, because that's revealed in this chapter. We hadn't had a name for that before, right?
I was going to ask if his friend's name had been brought up before.
Was it Vienta or something like that?
I was having some Sunlit Man discussions, probably on Discord, one of the discords that I'm in, and someone brought up that we knew that auxiliary couldn't be his honor spren because of a gender issue. He versus she in pronoun use.
Really?
I remember this, but I'm not necessarily trusting my memory, but I have this vague recollection of discussing something like that. I think this was back when we only had the preview chapters of Sunlit. So this was a while ago.
Okay.
But I feel like we knew a little bit about Sigsil Spren, but it's like a really easy to miss, like one-off line.
Right.
So, I don't know, we could check the Copper Mind if we care.
Yeah, and then other stuff of like the sibling and the Stormfather being directly related and stuff like that. It's all stuff that we've gathered behind the scenes. But I don't know if we've ever been directly told that the Night Watcher, the Stormfather, and the sibling are all one-to-one correlation with each, like Bondsmith, and like they're all like siblings of each other. I don't know if that's ever been directly spelled out for us, that type of thing.
I think the Night Watcher being the third Bondsmith is just kind of thrown out there. Right. And we had assumed this, but I don't think that this is the first time it's confirmed. And so it's the kind of thing where I read that and went, oh yeah, okay, confirmed now. Like, and I moved on. It wasn't shocking. But I think if someone who's not paying attention or not spending a lot of time theory crafting would go, oh, the Night Watcher is the third Bondsmith's friend? Like that could be like you didn't pick up on the clues before,
right?
Type thing.
Yeah, all of that went over my head in terms of being surprised by it or thinking from the other side. To me, it was just like, okay, yeah, good information moving forward. I do want to talk a little about Sigsil. Can we?
Yeah. What do you think about Sigsil?
Yeah. I mean, he's got a lot. I think we're finally getting to dive into his story a little bit more. He's definitely going to be more of a major character, leading a whole force, a whole defense. It's got a lot of feelings, got a lot of concerns, a lot of feeling like he's faking it. And it's very, very relatable. though his spread name, as we were just talking about at Vienta, I guess his spread is Italian. It sounds like a very, his spread sounds like a very Italian name to me.
Vienta. Yeah, or Spanish. It could be Spanish.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
But yes, a Latin language for sure. I don't know if Vienta is going to survive this book.
That's my worry, right? He has to say the fourth ideal at least first. We talked about this before, but if he does, like if he's a main POV character of this book, I could see him saying the fourth ideal even like during the battle. And then we're like, heck yeah, he's got his plate. He's going to, you know, destroy this fight. And then Anti-Light comes in and just, you know, no more spread.
Right.
Similar to like when we're like, oh, cool, Elikar saying the first ideal.
Never mind.
Also, just because I looked it up, Coppermind has Zigzil's honor spren as unnamed female honor spren. Right. So we got a pronoun, but we didn't get a name previously. It does not cite where that comes from, and I'm not really be able to look that up on the fly. So
I'm curious with this Zigzil stuff. Obviously, we're getting more of him, which leads to something important going to happen with him. I'm curious if he loses Vienta in this book and then does like Skybreaker stuff on the back five and then leaves the planet, or if he's just not in the back five and he already's done Skybreaker stuff before the back five starts. I'm really wondering which one that timeline's going to be.
He uses a Dawn Shard before he leaves.
Right.
Do we think he's using a Dawn Shard in this book? And I think the answer is no, I don't think he is.
I have very mixed feelings on the Dawn Shards. I don't know if I want them used heavily in this book or not. I mean, obviously they've been foreshadowed enough to where they can be used. I don't know if they will fully be used by the end of this book. Unclear to me.
I think the events that are described in Sunlit, honestly, it are back half or post back half. Like,
right.
I don't think that they're at all spoilery of like anything we're reading in the near future.
Right.
So I think we could spend a long time talking about it and it going nowhere. I think that I would like to see Zigzil say the fourth ideal this book. I'm also very worried about his spren, but I think beyond that, I don't think anything else from Sunlit's relevant.
I'm just kind of curious what his fourth ideal will be. He talks about being a fraud with Vienta in this chapter. I wonder if that doesn't really... Well, the maybe it does.
Fourth ideals are very personal,
I think. Right.
Like, Kaladin struggled with the, I need to save everybody, I need to save everybody, like, his whole life, right?
Right.
Back to Tien, right? And not admitting, like, he always considered himself a failure if anyone died under his watch.
Right.
And so that's what he struggled with his whole life. So Zigzil struggling with, his big, big struggle, I think you're right, is feeling like an imposter syndrome. He's like, I'm not really a world singer. I'm bad at telling stories. I'm not really a windrunner. I'm not really the leader. I'm just channeling Kaladin. Like, his fourth ideal has to have something to do with that, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
I am competent.
I don't know. I can do it.
That's it. Those are the words.
Yes, I can. Yeah.
I think we've got it down pat.
Perfect.
What?
Yeah.
What do you guys think of the? Do you have anything more on Zigzil?
No, Tim? No.
Okay. What do you guys think of the Mink? I'm really happy that the Mink is recurring here. I really enjoy the concept of somebody that Dalinar has hurt personally in the past, working then alongside Dalinar and leaning in some trust with the Mink. And then the Mink kind of like flips this oath back on Dalinar, that whole concept, and Yasna like really having an issue with it, that whole concept is really cool, and I'm glad we're exploring it with the mink. What'd you guys think of the mink?
I think it was quite devious, but also I think part of it is I'm just caught up with the main characters, so I want to do what's best for the main characters, where the mink is different. I like him being around as a character, and I like the different thinking that they can assault and take back his homeland.
I'm worried that the mink is not really on their side.
Sure.
He's always touted as this amazing strategist, and as far as we can tell, he is. And he knows all the battles that are coming up, and he's like, oh, I only need like half your Windrunners. And I'm going to force you to do it. I'm going to exploit your sense of honor to take away a large portion of your Windrunners at this moment.
Right.
Like, that feels like a betrayal to me.
3 days before he really needs them on the Shattered Plains.
Yeah.
Right. What do you guys give any credibility to the dive for Alethkar thing that comes up? I was not expecting this, but it did make me think of, there's a line in Sunlit where Sigzil is talking to Auxiliary, and Sigzil mentions something about those events that happened in Alethkar as an offhand mention. Like, they're talking about his oaths, and he apologized to Auxiliary about those events that happened in Alethkar, or Auxiliary asked him about those events that happened in Alethkar. And I've always thought that was an odd use of the term, because I was like, okay, surely that means the Shattered Plains or Yur'Athiru or whatever, like, they're classifying as Alethkar at the time. Now I'm not sure, because if they are making this dive for Alethkar like Odium is to the other capitals, could they take back Kolinar by the end of the book?
No, I don't think so. I think that's something that's going to happen in the future.
Okay, I found the line. Should I give any context? Let's see. I'll give one paragraph context. I'm not your apprentice, Nomad said, and don't pretend to care now. You didn't do anything when my friends and I were dying to arrows all those years ago. So he's talking to Wit.
Yes, that's chapter 10.
Yeah. I went to damnation then, and you sat around playing a flute. Don't you dare presume to imply that you care about me now. I'm just another tool to you. So Nomad's, Sigzil's very clearly mad at Wit. And Wit replies, I never did get a chance to apologize for events in Alethkar. Well, it's not like you had the opportunity to, Nomad said. After frequently talking to my superior officer, asking him to pass messages to me, after living together in the same city for years and never stopping by, you left me to rot. And it ate you away from the inside, didn't it? Not because you care, but because someone knew what you really were, then had the audacity not to die and simplify your life. So Wit and Sigzil lived in the same city and never talked. And Wit needs to apologize for events in Alethkar. He could be referencing exactly what Sigzil said, which is the Shattered Plains stuff.
Right. So it clearly sounds like they're talking about Shattered Plains events. But the use of the term Alethkar, I always thought was weird.
Maybe by then, like, the Shattered Plains are Alethkar, and so, right, like, in their minds, like, that is what that location is.
Sure.
But yeah, it's interesting.
I assume that's what it is, and it's just a semantics type thing, but I've always thought it was weird.
It could also be Sanderson being cheeky and like trying to hint strongly at who Nomad is, but not like say Shattered Plains specifically.
Sure.
To avoid like it being too heavy-handed, although this is pretty heavy-handed if you've read Stormlight at all, but
mm-hmm. And it could be referencing future events as well, like you're saying. Even if it's not in this book, you know.
Right. By the time this book is over, the Shattered Plains could be Alethkar, like, officially. So maybe that's, okay.
I mean the state of Roshar could have changed significantly between even the back half of these books and Sunlit. So
right,
we're back to talking about Sunlit stuff, aren't we?
Yeah. So, that might not sorry to bring it all. Up.
So, okay, it's interesting. But...
We can let's talk about the honor stuff. Because Dalinar has this whole plan. He has this little powwow with Yasna and Wit and Queen Fen and Lift and the Mink are hiding under the table. Who else is there? Adolin's not there. Navani's obviously there. I think there's somebody else I'm missing. But anyway, they have this whole discussion about, okay, could I feasibly go grab honor before the contest? They talk about it for a little bit. Queen Fen's like all of it's going way over her head. And Lift and the Mink seem pretty chill about it as they're listening in. And then the Stormfather interrupts them and brings them to this like vision, Kaladin strung up in the high storm style of like face stretching across the sky. How dare you do this? This is not where I thought we were going with this. Like more drama between the Stormfather and Dalinar talking about picking up honor. This was not on my bingo card for Wind and Truth. So how do you guys feel about it? I didn't think this was something we would be exploring.
It gives some context for why we got the prologue that we did with the Stormfather being upset with Gavilar and Gavilar's mission. It was all very interesting stuff, but it didn't seem very relevant to the story until now. It's very relevant. This is something that the Stormfather is very sensitive to. You know, maybe his existence currently is tied to the power and he would go back to and lose something, go back to what he was before without it. Somehow he's very invested in this.
There's a lot of really interesting things about this. The thing that really stuck out to me with the Stormfather, at least, was he says that he has a plan.
Well, and then he mixes... Okay, so I noticed that too. He mixes up nouns with himself and honor. Like, he's like, I had a plan. And Dalinar said, wait, no, I thought you said honor had a plan. And the Stormfather's like, yes, honor has a plan. I was like, huh?
What's the exact phrasing here? Because
yeah.
Wow, plan is mentioned a lot in these chapters. Hold
on. Would you get like 15 results or something like that?
47.
47 plans.
Yeah. It doesn't help that plant comes up in the search.
Yeah, and planet. And
planet.
Plan space. Would eliminate those.
Plan space, yeah. Okay, there's only 9 of those. Huh, I can't find it. Did he not say plan? I need help here.
I'm looking as well.
I looked up honor maybe to see if that would be better.
Period.
Okay.
Plan period. I found it.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're talking about whether Dalinar can ascend. Let's start from here. Stormfather says, this is not for you to seek or decide. The power cannot go to one who wants it, Dalinar. That's interesting on its own.
Yeah.
Power cannot go to one who wants it. You said it was impossible earlier. Impossible the way you want it to happen. And Cultivation, who brought this plan to me in the first place, traitor. She should know the implausibility of what she suggests. So which is it, Stormfather? Dalinar demanded. Is it impossible or merely implausible? Is it wrong, or is it the only way to unite people as I've been trying all along? And his response to this is, this is not my plan. And then you're right. He says, your plan, Dalinar pushed. I thought this was Honor's plan. You said he charged you to find people for the visions so they could prepare for the upcoming dangers. You're filling a role just like me. You have no idea what you're talking about. Basically, I lied to you about that, is how I read that.
Yes.
I only know what you've told me. Honor's plan, Honor abandoned us. It's working, though, is it?
Yeah.
So is the plan working? Is the big crux of this entire thing.
And yeah, that seems really odd to me that the Stormfather mistook himself for Honor, or at least lied to himself, lied to Dalinar about it being his plan versus there's something suspicious going on here.
I agree. And this is jumping ahead a little bit. The Stormfather says, I broke the heralds. Wasn't Honor involved in that? It was like Honor going crazy, or at least is what he says.
Yes.
My first reading of that, and often my first reading is not correct, but often it is. So this is kind of like a 50-50 here. It's either wrong or it's not. 50-50 chance. But my first reading of this was, because I, you know, I'm completely stuck on this whole thing of with Baal Mishram, where her capture caused so many problems, and I, including, in my opinion, I think it's leaning towards it causing the Herald madness. And so if the Stormfather was involved in capturing Baal Mishram, then just like everyone else who talks about this, he's taking responsibility for the consequences of that.
Yeah. I have another thing to get to, but it's tangentially related, so I'll pause for a second. Do you guys... I don't know that, because Dalinar makes the claim that Honor has abandoned us. But Dalinar knows that's not true. We've gone through four books now of claiming that Honor is still here, lives in the hearts of men. As long as you're honorable, that you can, you know, bring Honor with you. It's not a dead or alive thing. It's that you have to take up the mantle. So, like, obviously Dalinar is frustrated in this scene with the Stormfather, as he should be. I'm just stuck on the fact that this is not where I thought we were going. I did not think that we were talking about explicitly on page picking up Honor. I thought it would just be kind of a thing that either happened or didn't at the end of the book.
I mean, it was very much a fan favorite theory, right?
Right.
It's like Dalinar is going to become Honor, or maybe Honor and Odium, or maybe all three, right? And but we all assumed that what we were told was correct, that Honor was splintered or shattered,
right,
or whatever the word is.
Right.
Shattered. Where did we pick up that Honor was shattered?
It's a great I mean we talked about this earlier in Chris's Roshar excerpt in Arcanum Unbounded. It explicitly says that Honor is no longer intact. And
when was that written? When were these excerpts written?
When did Brandon write them, or when did Chris write them?
When did Chris write them?
Oh. Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah. And I will say Wit also assumes that Honor was splintered in these chapters. Shattered. Yeah. I said it a little bit earlier, but I want to go back to this. I think the Stormfather is not necessarily lying about the timeline. That's another thing that was brought up, lying about when he was created. I think really he has taken on the role of guiding Honor's power in some lesser capacity, and through that he's gained a lot of the memories and the temperament, and that's why he has changed at when for so long he didn't change.
Well, something along those lines as well that I wanted to bring up, which is the tangentially related thing. We're in Yasna's point of view when it comes up that the sibling isn't like telling the whole truth about the old bondsmiths. We opened with this, is that the bondsmiths used to bond the primal forces or whatever. And Yasna's, and the reason why that comes up is because Yasna says, well, I thought you guys weren't around then. And sibling's like, yes and no, kind of. And Yasna has an internal point of view. It's like, that really bugs me. I want to go learn about that. I'm a Varisitalian. I need to go, like, this is really bothering me. Yeah, it's really bothering me too, okay? Because are you lying to us, Brandon, or are you not lying to us, Brandon? I need to know. So,
yeah. So this is the line Some 6,000 years ago, when the Stones wanted a legacy in the form of a child of honor and cultivation, back when bondsmiths bonded not to Spren, but to the ancient forces left by gods. So the sibling was created some 6,000 years ago. Yasna is confused. So the whole discussion between Yasna and the sibling is interesting because Yasna is very confident in her knowledge of history.
Right.
But it's really hard to know what happened 5,000-6,000 years ago, especially with certain events that would occur, like the desolations constantly happening. So I think this is just Yasna is wrong. And we're going to get some interesting info from Dalinar's spiritual realm adventures where we're going to be like, whoa, this is not what we thought Roshar history was. And I think there's going to be some major things there.
I completely agree. What I think Brandon is doing here in these chapters with cultivation, talking to Dalinar of saying honor's not actually shattered, surprise. And then the sibling talking about, well, we weren't there originally, but now we are. I think it's Brandon saying like, okay, this is where I actually want to go with it. Even though I've like given you precursors on like early Roshar history, because there's plenty of people that have asked him about this type of stuff and he's given answers. And now I think he's trying to go in a different direction with it. And he's just keying this in for us as we go into whatever we're about to find out in the spiritual realm of it's absolutely not what we made assumptions about. So.
Yeah. And timeline wise, 4,500 years ago was the, when the heralds, like there was the last desolation.
Right.
And so that means that the sibling was around for something like 1,500 years of desolations.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with that, but like, do we know how long ago the first desolation was?
Well, and kind of in that similar vein, I'm going to ask another question and not answer yours. I think the storm was around before that. We've been told that the Stormfather was on Roshar before Odium was. So,
well, the storm was created by Adonalsium when he created the planet.
Right.
At least that's what we've been told by words of Brandon's.
Correct.
And then it was kind of hijacked by Honor.
I assume maybe. So. Yeah.
Here's another assumption. We assume the storm has always provided Stormlight.
We also make the assumption that the storm's always had a Stormfather.
Yeah. But like, so for since Honor's death, definitely the Stormfather has been recharging spheres. Was he recharging spheres before Honor died, or was Honor doing that himself? We know Honor was directly providing investiture to the heralds at the very least.
I assume the Stormfather was created for that purpose. And to answer your question earlier, I remember we talked about it, and I think the conclusion we came to was most likely the desolation started in the first generation, or maybe within a generation after humans came to Roshar. So that would have been, 1,000 years of desolations before the sibling was created. And the sibling says the Stormfather was created shortly before, but if you've been around for 6,000 years, what does shortly mean?
If you've been talking to Spren, they don't really understand time, so.
Yeah.
As opposed to Nightblood, who really has a good grasp on time, like super, super time sensitive Nightblood is.
And yeah. Feelings. Mm-hmm. I do want to talk about the night. Are you guys fine with moving on to that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we get the night, the wind, and the stones, and that's where each of these three bondsmith's friend come from. Who is the knight? I've got my theories based off of what they're saying. What do you think, David?
So the knight is described as an ancient force, I believe. Is that true?
Yes.
So I back to the dust discussion, right? I feel like they're just because of the way investiture works, there's this perception of abstract concepts that are given life through a lot of people thinking about it. Just how the cognitive realm, it purely exists because of how people think about things. So I feel like you think about the night a lot, and the night kind of becomes its own thing. And then it becomes something of power. So I don't know that in my mind, it's not anything more than that, but I'm happy to hear like your theories, Tim, on that.
So the three we were given, the night, the wind, and the stones, really feeds into the whole Shinovar thing that we're going to go find out, because, you know, the Shin have a thing about stones, can't walk on stones, stone walker, et cetera, et cetera. There's some primal, I'm going to stop using the word primal and use ancient instead.
Yeah.
There's ancient powers on Roshar that were obviously present when the humans came over. I think the stones becoming like sacred stayed in Shinovar, and there's a force like that we've been talking about. Like the wind speaks directly to Kaladin. I assume the stones and the night will do the same. So the stones will speak directly to whoever worships them or you know, reveres them, however, whatever word you want to use there. And the night will do the same. So now I'm wondering if that has to do with our unmade, because we have Midnight Essence, we have the Night Watcher, we have, this will actually segue us nicely into our next chapter here. We have the, the unmade that's present in Shinovar, that we've been talking about for a long time, that there's something going on here with the wind, the night, and the stones. And we're going to go explore the stones one specifically with Kaladin and Zeth.
I think we've seen the stones. I just realized this. It's in a Venli chapter in Rhythm of War, which I know most people don't like those chapters, but she literally gets a history lesson from the stones.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's Venli chapters are forgettable, but
yeah,
I think that was snuck in there.
Huh.
Curious.
So I think that, isn't there just, am I making this up? You feel free to tell me I'm making this up, but isn't there like a general, like subtle theme of the stones talking to you?
I think you might be making this up.
Like you can speak with the stones. I don't know. There's something about that. I do know that Dalinar talks to stones at one point when he remakes the temple.
Oh yeah. You're right.
Okay. There is that.
But that's more in the context of like the stick, like convincing the stones to go become whole again. That's more like the Spren thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I could be wrong. I could even be thinking about some other lore in another completely different series, but I don't know. I get this. I have this vague feeling of like Zeth honoring the stones, like the stones speak to you or something like that. Like that's why you don't trust. I don't know. I could be making it up. If I don't have any evidence for it, so we can just move on, I guess. But I
wonder if Dalinar's gonna reform the planes.
I mean, if the wind can talk, then it seems like the stone and the night should be able to talk too. That's
just something.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think the night and the wind, not the wind, the night and the stones perhaps were both unmade. It seems like the night could have been the Midnight Mother, you know, ancient forces left by gods. Perhaps there was an Aether who was left, or an Aether bound who was left there. I just listened to where Shallan chases off. Which one is it?
Rhea Shafir.
Yeah, Rhea Shafir, the Midnight Mother. And there's a very explicit statement that she used to have some sort of aliveness that she lost when she was unmade. So I could very easily see that being something where they got to the stones But the wind made it away.
And that could explain why the wind stopped speaking and like went into hiding, basically, is because the wind did not want to become an unmade.
Right. And it's just now coming back.
Yeah, and perhaps they were unmade because this is what the bondsmiths originally were bonded to. And then they were replaced by something new because the wind, the night, and the storms were lost for various reasons.
If I had a, if I had to guess which unmade would be the stones, I think Yelignar, because Yelignar's like made of crystal and stuff.
Is that the one that eats everybody?
Yelignar is the one that Amaram swallowed.
Yeah, and it consumes him from the inside. And
yeah,
what's her face? Elokar's wife. Same thing. Yeah.
I don't know what else would be stony. Unless it's the one in Shinnevar that we haven't really seen much of.
It could
that
be would, the,
I know we want to talk about that.
But. It could be the whatever the stones one could be the Chemorash, which they call the dust mother. Yeah.
I feel like that would be the dust.
Yeah, if we're going down the dust route, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. It's really hard to know. But I think that it's a very strong theory that these ancient forces became the unmade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Shaan Not even talks about how she was, what, did she say she was made and then unmade, or did she just say she was made, unmade?
She, or? Correct. Shallan accuses her of being an unmade, and Shaan Not says, well, we were made, and then we were unmade. So whatever that means.
What does it mean?
Okay, Shaan Not.
Maybe it's
I think this is a good transition into talking about which unmade is in Shinnevar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's and go over and let's back up here real quick. We know where most of them are in Oathbringer. I'm on a reread of Oathbringer. I did not realize at the time how many unmade are in that book. There's like five. Yeah. Five out of the nine or whatever.
I did an accounting in the
notes. Okay, what do we have?
So I'm just going to go alphabetically. Ashurtmarn, what is the heart of the revel? Sure. So what we're looking for is an unmade who we haven't seen, because this unmade has been in Shinnevar before Zeth left.
Correct.
Do you all agree with that?
And likely long before that.
Yeah. Yes. Zeth even talks about at some point, like how Nightblood isn't the first voice he's had in his head.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if that voice in his head was the unmade in Shinnevar. So we can't have seen this unmade. So that's what I'm assuming. So Ashurtmarn we saw in Kolinar. Baudo Mishram is in the spiritual realm. I'm going to skip the next two because those are the most likely. We've got Moloch. Moloch we know travels around, causes the death rattles. If he's traveling around, then he is not bound in Shinnevar. Ner'Gaul is in a gem now, the thrall.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Shapir, that's the
Midnight Mother.
She was in Yur'Thiru for a long time. Jaan Not, we know, just moves around doing something, corrupting Spren. And then Yelignar was most recently swallowed by Amaram. So the two, I think that these two, and I think it's not a coincidence that it's two of them. I think these two unmade, one of them's in Shinnevar and one of them was in the Dvar household.
Yes.
So the two that are left is Chemorish, it's C-H, I don't know how that's pronounced, or the Dust Mother. So we have this quote from an epigraph. Chemorish, the Dust Mother, has some of the most varied lore surrounding her. The wealth of it makes sorting lies from truths extremely difficult. I do believe she is not the Night Watcher, contrary to what some stories claim. Which is an interesting thing to bring up. And so, also according to Hesse, she's not one of the three mindless unmade. So if it was a mindless unmade, it would not be the one in Shinnevar if it's talking to Zeth. We don't know much of anything about Chemorish, and that might be on purpose if that's the one in Shinnevar.
Yeah.
The only other one is Daigonarthus, the Blackfisher.
Yeah.
we get this death rattle. Let me no longer hurt. Let me no longer weep. Digonarthus, the Blackfisher, holds my sorrow and consumes it.
And that one, I think, is quite credibly credited to the Dvar household. I think Digonarthus, if we were to split these, would be in the Dvar household and is currently assigned to Moash, is my headcanon. I think Digonarthus is currently dedicated to Moash. And then the Dust Mother, I think, is our most credible culprit here.
I tend to agree. The question is, was Lynn Dvar behaving the same as Moash?
No. Short answer, no.
I don't think so either. Lynn Dvar had anger issues.
Correct.
And was clearly suffering from pain. So you'd think if Digonarthus took his pain, he would be acting more ennui-ish. I don't know, like he wouldn't care.
But Shallan's brother has compassion pain issues, right? Like he pulls apart crabs and doesn't feel anything about it. And Lynn Dvar could be fighting it, like could be being under attack by an unmade, but it hasn't given himself over to it. That would be my argument. Mm.
That's interesting. Yeah. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
I mean, the assumption is whichever one we encounter in Shinovar, the other one is the Dvar one.
Right.
But we don't know anything about Dust Mother, so it's really hard to theorize at this point.
Right.
Is there, can we process of elimination of like what is a ancient force or like a way that surges kind of manifest that isn't accounted for in any of these unmade?
Yes. I don't know if we should lend the time to it, but yes, I think we could.
Not right now, but I think maybe that's an area of study for not real time. But.
Well, and something I just actually thought of, what do you get when you combine wind and stones? I would argue you get dust. So maybe the unmade are the children, like the Stormfather and the sibling of ancient forces.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So you combine two forces and you get one of the unmade.
Yeah.
So maybe we're going to get a lot more bondsmiths.
Well, that's not what I was going with that.
I mean, Dalinar basically bonded the Thrill.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Or and Jon and Ray Shaffir tried to bond Shallan.
Yeah. So it is possible to bond the unmade. And I think a lot of Dalinar's exploits as the Black Thorn were only possible through the magical bonding with the Thrill.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, that would make some things make a little bit more sense.
Like getting shot with three arrows and just shrugging it off. Like
just pulling it out of your shoulder.
Yeah, like this is something that feels magical to me. Like you've got, you're burning pewter, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and Dalinar specifically says that the first time he deliberately burns Stormlight, he's done it before. He recognizes it and says, I've been doing this before, at least at some point. Yeah. So
another interesting thought. I wonder if there are people in Shinovar who have bonded that unmade.
The stone shamans, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The stone shamans are known to be like fearsome, right? Zeth says, yeah, if I die and I drop the honor blade, the stone shamans will retrieve it.
They'll come get it. Yeah.
They'll come get it. Like as if that was not a problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Maybe my thought always in the past was the stone shamans have most of the honor blades. So they would just utilize those to retrieve it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is still possible. So,
I mean, it could even be that the stone shamans are still void binding, like with Odium. Like Odium never left and is hanging out in like directly with the humans in Shinovar.
That'll be interesting too.
That would be. Seems unlikely to me. But I'd be curious to see. I do want to bring up one last thing. When Kaladin is trying to talk to Zeth, Zeth turns around and they get in an argument, and he says, "Not all beneath your judging gaze are in need of your protection." And immediately this phrase came to mind. You can't help people who don't want to change. You can't force people to get help to get better.
You can lead a horse to water.
Yeah, but you can't make it drink.
Kaladin fifth ideal coming?
Could be.
I will protect all those who seek it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. Like we haven't encountered a fifth ideal yet. So we don't know what to expect from those or what happens when you achieve it. But I feel like it has to be even more fundamental to Kaladin's arc than even his fourth ideal was. And he struggled with that fourth ideal for his whole life.
Right.
So, but all, I think all of his ideals were lessons his dad tried to teach him. So I'm still on the lookout for like, what's the lesson his dad tried to teach him that he hasn't internalized yet. When Zeth said that line, I had the same kind of passing thought of like, is that a hint at an ideal? It really stings though, right? Not all beneath your judging gaze are in need of your protection. Zeth does not like Kaladin.
it's a good line though, because
he thinks Kaladin is holier than thou.
Kaladin has a judging gaze. He does not hold back, and so neither does Zeth.
It makes me go back to the line from last week where he was like, "So you're a coward then?" Like, I think Zeth is just trying to piss off Kaladin. He just doesn't like him. Yeah. He said something about like, you're the one who almost killed me. Like,
I did take note of the almost, because in the original print he did kill him. And in the second print, he didn't kill him. So that's very interesting.
Now, is Zeth mad at Kaladin for almost killing him? For almost killing him? Or for almost killing him? Because Zeth needs to die.
That's a good question. That is a good question. That's
like,
funny.
You should have done a better job killing me. He was like, I had this sweet release of death. Yeah, he really should be blaming Nail. Bringing him back in that case.
Right.
We know that Zeth is not the best at directing his anger at the correct person.
I could see some sort of twisted Zeth arc of him blaming Kaladin for his current life. Yeah. I don't know if that's where we're going.
Yeah, it's probably just tension for the story. I doubt it's going to go anywhere big. But I don't know. We'll see. Come together next week and I'll eat my words.
It's a classic Sanderson zinger though. Like that one stands out. Like Sanderson sometimes has just these great lines. Like, honor is dead, but I'll see what I can do. Right. This stuck out to me as like one of those great lines.
Anything else, gentlemen?
These were very long chapters. I'm sure we missed some stuff, but I think we covered the big things.
There was plenty in it. All right. Let's reconvene next week with whatever we get from Brandon. Thanks for joining me, David and Tim.
Thanks for having me.
See you next week.
See ya.